What is up, everybody? Welcome to Happy Hour Hoops. It is Jake here along with Steve for another week of NBA talk. As always, presented by our sponsor, WinStreaks. Presenting sponsor, it's simple. You pick teams to win games. It's completely free. You get 5 picks per day, accumulate points, and then you can win cash prizes weekly. Like I said, make 5 picks per day on every sport, baseball season, basketball season, hockey season in full swing right now. There's a lot of options to make picks from every single day. 100 players win cash prizes every week up to $2,000. The contest starts on Monday, ends on Sunday, so you get a reset every Monday. No deposits ever. For 100% free to play always. And if you refer friends, you can win an additional 50% of what they win. So use our promo code Triple H when you sign up and start winning cash prizes, picking your favorite teams to win. Jake Micah with Steve here today. Bunny is on load management this week.
He's like the Celtics. He clenched already.
Exactly.
He clenched.
He's ready to go. So we'll be back next. He'll be back next week for our playoff preview. Today it's awards season. We've got all the awards. We did talk about the MVP a little bit. I think you know where we all stand a little bit on our MVP race. But we got to make it official today. We got to put our picks in there, put them in writing, see where it goes. But Steve, how are you this week? How was your weekend watching hoops? It's kind of weird right now because all the teams are set, so we're just seeing a battle for seeding going on right now. But still some positions that need to be decided too. The top of the West, the middle of the East, really still in flux right now.
Yeah, some important seeding still to go. It was a good weekend. Obviously, this past weekend we got to watch a little Final Four action for both the men's and the women's, which was very enjoyable. The women's tournament, you know, was unbelievable. You know, Caitlin Clark, the UConn game was iconic. And then obviously the championship against South Carolina. South Carolina is just so damn good, man. They're just so dominant. And that's kind of what we saw on the men's side too, right? With UConn, just another dominant team. You know, the men's tournament, you can say it was kind of disappointing, which I would agree with. I thought it was a little lackluster of a tournament, but all credit goes to UConn for how dominant they were. I mean, back-to-back NCAA tournament championships, winning every game by double digits. You just don't see that nowadays, which is crazy. So that was awesome. And then now we're right back locked in on the NBA. We're right into the playoff race. It's getting close. And Jake, we got a couple really, really cool races I got my eye on. First off, the West top three seeds, right? You got Minnesota, Denver, and Oklahoma City. And that's big for me, too, because I want anyone besides Denver as the one seed, with the Mavs pretty much locked in the 4-5 matchup against the Clippers, which I think is going to be a tough test anyways. I think the Clippers are one of, you know, the tougher teams as of late in the West. And don't want to see Denver in the second round, I'll tell you that much. So I'm hoping Minnesota can get the upset tonight. There hasn't been a lot of, like, big basketball games on lately in the NBA in terms of, like, this is an important one. Tonight, man, Minnesota and Denver, everyone's got to have that circled on their calendar. I think that's going to be an awesome game. And then you look in the play-ins, right? Right now, if the season ended today, Jake, we got Warriors-Lakers, one game elimination. Like, how sick is that? Curry versus LeBron. And then on the Eastern Conference, you have Philadelphia, who's won 6 straight, still in the play-in. Embiid is back. Right now it would be Philly-Miami. And then, you know, you got Chicago-Atlanta, who's been pretty much locked in for 2 weeks, it feels now, is the 9-10 seed there. But these play-ins are getting tough. I know there's a lot of teams that, like, don't have too much to play for right now, so it's kind of hard to, besides seeding, I guess, hard to really make a conclusion on what the team's going to look like. We saw Milwaukee lose 4 straight against some bad teams, and then they beat Boston. So it's really hard for me to, I guess, make conclusions on some of the teams. Obviously, Boston, they've been clinched the one seed for, it feels like, a little over a week now. But we got some good games coming up. I'm just waiting for the playoffs at this point, right? There's a couple big games for seeding implication, but at this point, man, it's going to be a war, I think, in both conferences for different reasons. The West has been, we've talked about it, as loaded and stacked as ever. Can't wait for that war. And then the East, it's like, can one of these teams get to Boston? And I'll tell you what right now, Jake, and I'm sure you don't want to hear this too, especially with your Cavs, but I feel like any of the play-in teams in the East or any of the lower seed in the East are live to upset in the first round, maybe besides, you know, Boston against whatever the eighth seed will be, even if it's Miami, which it very well could be. But I don't know. I think the East, we could see some upsets in the first couple of rounds. I'm really looking forward to that. And then the West, like I said, it's wide open. Are you telling me right now that if Minnesota's the one seed and the Lakers are the eight, that Minnesota's going to be a heavily favored? I don't know. I don't know about that, dude. So I'm just ready for the playoffs. Ready to be locked in for more basketball. College basketball, great season. You know I love my college basketball, but now we can have full focus on the NBA.
Yeah, it was a – to kick off with the – where you started with the national championship, South Carolina. I mean, it was a close game. You know, you were expecting it to be close for a little while, but South Carolina just too much talent, too deep of a team. Like, the fact that
they just
– too big. Yeah, the size really affected them. And it was really – you know, it was an awesome Final Four. The Friday night was such great action between South Carolina and NC State, and then that wonderful game – between Iowa and UConn that came down to a very questionable foul call, but we'll not leave that neither here nor there. It led us to a national title game, which was exciting most of the way through, but you felt like South Carolina was going to be able to pull away, and they did. UConn,
just too good. They're just too good.
Is it just going to be every year with UConn? Like, I feel like Dan Hurley's not going to slow it down anymore.
And right.
Big East felt like the best conference, at least like the top tier of the Big East throughout the year, and UConn showed that. I mean, that was Purdue – you know, maybe one of the best teams in the country all year long, and they didn't look like they belonged on that floor with UConn for most of that game. I mean, they had some runs, they kept it close a little bit, but it never felt like it was out of UConn's control. And once they started rolling in the second half, you're like, there's nothing Purdue can do in this game at all.
And that was what impressed me the most with UConn, not just that game, but the entire tournament, right? When you watched Purdue this year, and I said, as much as I hate Purdue, as much as I say they're a boring team to watch, they probably had the best resume out of conference of any team in college basketball this year. But when you watched Purdue in this tournament early on, Jake, they could do whatever they wanted because teams were so worried about Zach Edey, right? They were so worried about how do we stop him? How do we change what we want to do? UConn, they just like, we're not going to change anything. We'll keep Donovan clinging on him. We'll give help when we need, but we're not going to change anything we're going to do. Zach Edey can have 30-plus points.
Yep.
He can have 15-plus rebounds. It's not going to change how we play offense or how we play defense. And I thought that was so impressive from UConn because they're the only team against Purdue, I think, all year that really didn't change what their game plan was for Zach Edey and for Purdue, which I thought was impressive. And also, too, with UConn, you watch that game in the second half against Purdue when they started to press because, you know, maybe they can make a three-pointer, get that full-court press set up, go on a little bit of a run. UConn might be the only college basketball team I've seen maybe since the Florida Gator teams. Back in, I think, 06, 07, that was just not phased at all by the full court press. Not phased at all by the full court press. Good evening, Bloomy, by the way. Bloomy's not phased at all. But not phased at all by the full court press. And that was the craziest thing because college basketball, what do we say all the time? It's a very chaotic, more chaotic style of basketball than the NBA. There's a lot more sloppiness, a lot more turnovers, a lot more streaky shooting. And when I watched UConn play, Jake, they looked like a professional team. Not saying they're as talented as an NBA team because you've heard my conversation with Dunny about that. But what I'm saying is that this is the only college basketball team I watched that doesn't matter that they're facing a guy who's 7'4". Does not matter that they're getting a full court press against them. Does not matter. They just played their style. And it was just every single time they broke the press with ease. I mean, with ease, it's like, okay, here comes the double. Not worried at all. You watch any other college basketball team, and I'm not talking about mid-major teams. I'm not talking about bad teams. I'm talking about good college basketball teams. You watch any other good college basketball team, some guys can't handle a double team. Some guys don't know what to do when they get trapped in the corner. Every single time, UConn, every player on that court knew exactly where to pass it, knew exactly how to break the press, and knew exactly how to attack Purdue when Purdue would score their way. And they're like, all right, we just got to answer at a basket on our own, know exactly how to do it, know exactly how to attack Edey inside. It was honestly a masterpiece, and that's one thing I got to give UConn credit for. And what I felt was a disappointing NCAA tournament, UConn put on some of the most impressive basketball we've watched in a long time at the college level.
Yeah, well said, man. It was, it's, I mean, as you said, 2 years in a row, double-digit wins. That's pretty damn impressive. A team, not only a team that, I mean, they were a four seed last year, so it was more surprising last year. Didn't surprise anyone this year. Got everyone's best shot and was like, nah, we're just still better than everybody. Yeah, pretty number one overall seed, winning the tournament. You don't see it very often, but UConn was the class of the tournament this year. So congrats to the Huskies. Congrats to the Gamecocks. Yeah, really, like, I'm sure it's happened before, but both number one overall seeds in the tournaments winning is a very interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely outcome. Happened before, but the way they won, I think, is one of the things we haven't seen, especially like both men's and women in the same year with how dominant. I mean, South Carolina, I know we talked about how dominant UConn was. They still lost a few games of the regular season. South Carolina went 37-0. Like they didn't lose a single game. And I know I wanted Caitlin Clark and Iowa to win. I think a lot of people are rooting for that, especially to win with that group that she's been playing with. A lot of people say without Clark on that team, is Iowa even a tournament team? And I think there's still some solid players on that team. I think Hannah's a good player. I think Kate Martin's a solid player. Gabby Marshall, one of my favorite to watch just because of how she's just small, but she's a dog on defense, which, you know, that hits my heart right there. I love that style of basketball, but you know, everyone wanted her to kind of take that group of girls and win with that group, and to have back-to-back national championship appearances and just lose is tough. But I think that gives so much credit to South Carolina and how dominant they were this year that it just didn't matter. We saw how Caitlin Clark started the first quarter against South Carolina. She was lights out. Could not miss. They were up double digits to start the game. And then South Carolina is just a better team, bigger team. And you got to give credit there and credit to Dawn Staley, who has really like created a dominant program. We talk about the two teams, Jake, but we should talk about the two coaches, right? Dan Hurley and Dawn Staley have created just dominant basketball programs at their respective schools.
Yeah, the coaches really are the superstars in the college game, and those are two of the best of the best. It's a pleasure to see. It was a pleasure to watch them. Yeah, Bloomy said she took them above and beyond. Yeah,
I mean, it was incredible.
It's been incredible to watch all year. Love Dawn Staley. Yeah, it was a great national championship weekend. It was still, even though the games ended up double digits, they were both fun games to watch. You mentioned the playoff races, you know, in the East and West. We got it next Saturday starting. We got the playoffs start. I can't believe it's that close around the corner. The East is it's really just going to be both conferences. I shouldn't even just say the East, but the matchups are going to be the key to everything. Like you mentioned my Cavs. They're at the Magic right now to start if that was a series. Honestly, I'd rather have them play the Magic than the Knicks or the Bucks, though. Like, I don't think that's crazy to say. Like, that's not discounting anything about the Magic, but if that's the 4-5 matchup, feel good about the Cavs. If it's a Knicks-Cavs 4-5 matchup, I'm going to be terrified. Like, we already saw this story last year. Definitely would feel better about the Pacers. I don't think the Bucks would feel good about playing the Sixers. We talked about the Doc Rivers factor last week. And you mentioned the Bucks, you know, yes, they got a win last night over the Celtics, a big win. The Celtics didn't really have to play for anything in that game. And I was texting with one of my Celtics fans friends who was like Bucks fans on Twitter treating this like it's game one of the finals. And we're just out here like chilling, not doing anything. And that's what it felt like in the arena and everything else. So I don't know what to make of this Bucks team, but like you said, I don't like their matchup against the Sixers or Heat potentially in a first round series. Like, I don't feel good about it. And we saw them last year in five games, man. Like, it wasn't even close last year. So we'll see. That East side is going to be really interesting. The West is a war zone, going to be matchup dependent. The Suns are confounding. Don't know what to do with them. Like you said, once LeBron's in a playoff series, LeBron and AD, who knows? Your Mavs and the Clippers are pretty much
guaranteed to play each other at this point. Yeah.
That's going to be my favorite series of the first round. So we got a lot to get into, but we'll get into our playoff preview next week once we have the matchups and at least a couple of the play-in games decided when we're here Wednesday. But we'll get to our news and notes before we get into our awards for the rest of the show. Some news this week. Giannis got hurt last night in the Bucks game, which
non-contact injury.
Non-contact. I saw that. I wasn't watching after the second. I wasn't watching into the second half and thrown on another game. Saw a thing later on, a tweet or whatever. And the first thing I saw on Twitter trending was Achilles. So I was very scared, but he avoided the Achilles injury. But it's a calf strain. Calf strain is not an easy thing to come back from quick, depending on how severe it is, but I feel like that's like a 3 to 4 week injury to fully recover from. He does not have 3 to 4 weeks.
No, he doesn't. And he also has to play like superhuman Giannis to save this Bucks team. And that is, I mean, that's the worst kind of news you want to hear if you're a Milwaukee Bucks fan, because you had already been struggling. And I know they beat the Celtics, but like Jake, like you said, we're not really thinking twice about that. Celtics really had nothing to play for. Bucks needed to win more than anything. It was desperation mode for him, especially with some of the losses that piled up lately before that Celtics win. The Bucks, I mean, you look at it, it's hard to, you know, point fingers and blame one person. But since Doc Rivers has gotten there, this has been a really, really different team. It's been a bad team. More losses with the Rivers than they had with Antley. I mean, it's not good. Giannis has really had to carry most of the load. He's having a phenomenal season, one of his best statistical seasons. And now you have him with a calf strain injury on a player like Giannis, too, the way he plays, how explosive he can be when he drives. Not a good sign. And not a good sign, too, like we were talking about, where you're probably going to play either Miami or Philly coming out of the play. And that is no, like, all right, that's your reward for being the 2 seed in the East. That's bad, man. That's tough. And you have a hobbled Giannis going up against Philly with Embiid, whose health seems to only be getting better right now. Not good news for the Milwaukee Bucks. I'm glad Giannis avoided the Achilles injury, because – but, you know, the NBA is better. Basketball is a better sport when Giannis is healthy and Giannis is playing. I still think he's one of the best, if not the best players in the world when he is fully 100% ready to go and he can take over any single game he wants. But, man, I mean, I feel like this is a this is an injury where it feels like it's probably going to leak into the postseason in my mind. And that's doomsday scenario for Milwaukee Bucks, because that's the heart and soul of your team right there. And that's probably the only guy who can save this team from an early exit with the way they've been playing, the history of Doc Rivers, and how Dame has looked lately. So,
yeah,
not good news for Bucks fans.
Yeah, it's really the whole Adrian Griffin Doc thing was confounding when it happened. It's even more confounding when you see them trying to rally together during the season. Yeah. And you can't really hope for it to be a next year move with that. Like, you hope, they hope that it would turn it around right away. Right. And it just hasn't done that for them. And I don't trust Dame. I mean, Dame in the playoffs, we've obviously seen him have some amazing performances, amazing series and everything else. But we've seen the signs of decline from Dame this year. Can we really trust him to carry in the playoffs when he's in a physical matchup where teams are scheming against them? And with Giannis hampered, I don't know, man. And it's just like the rest of that Bucks roster, it just feels like the Celtics are going to cruise through the East. Right. And so I don't know which one of these – maybe that's something we can talk about next week, is which one of these teams thinks we could give the Celtics the best chance, because, you know, the Randall injury with the Knicks. Like, I would have liked the Knicks in that scenario. The Magic, you know, but they're unproven, don't know about them. The Cavs have been a mess, and Donovan Mitchell's knee is just not right. And that's really what their biggest issue is. And he's also has, you know, he's wearing the facial mask and everything. Who knows how much that's affecting him if he feels uncomfortable. But the knee, the burst in the knee just isn't the same. And then, so maybe it's one of the surprise teams. Like, maybe it's the Sixers with Embiid back. Yeah. We talked about the Sixers.
When is the sixth straight?
Winners of six straight. We talked about them earlier in the year before Embiid went down. Like, maybe this is the year. Maybe that's the second best team in the East. So maybe that is it. Maybe we're just on pace for a Celtics Sixers Eastern Conference Finals, and we'll go from there. But it's tough news for Giannis. Good news, Karl-Anthony Towns and Trae Young both returning this week to play. Huge for the Wolves. Trae Young, obviously, he's the best NBA play-in player of all time. So that Bulls matchup, sorry, JBC, but
don't say that to JBC.
Most clutch team in the league, the Bulls, though. So we'll see what happens in that game in Chicago. But it's good to see Trae back on the court. I didn't think we'd see him again this year, so I'm excited and see what they can do in the play-in. But with Kat coming back, and our other news is Anthony Edwards dropping 51 the other night. The Timberwolves, we talked about them being at the top, huge game tonight with Denver. They're right at the top of the West still. Right now, they're actually the top seed in the West. They have the tiebreaker currently over Denver. With Kat coming back, maybe not, you know, sharp right away, but the fact that he's going to be back is huge for them. And with Anthony Edwards playing like he is, we'll talk about him with our All-NBA discussion later, I am sure. how serious can we take this Timberwolves team? Like, you know, you mentioned the Lakers. Like, are we gonna? We're still gonna be tempted to pick the Lakers or somebody like that. They match up in the first round. My biggest holdup is, you know, the Rudy Gobert of it all, and I think that's fair for everybody. But maybe we're not. Maybe I'm not taking them seriously enough. Am I doing them a disservice right now, Steve?
I mean, we've kind of been doubting them all year long, right? From the preseason when we had started talking about that going into this season, Jake, we were down.
We were talking about win totals next week, but they were my seventh pick.
Yeah,
and I had the third pick of all of us, so we did. They were not a high seed.
We, as a collective group, were down on the Timberwolves, and we made that very clear and abundant. But with Minnesota, I mean, they've kind of been proving us wrong all year long, right? And we kept saying, oh, yeah, it's a hot start, but we'll wait to see them fall off. We'll wait to see them fall off. Well, Jake, it's April 10th, and the Minnesota Timberwolves are tied for the best record in the Western Conference right now. And it's kind of a weird situation right now for the West, because if you look at it, right, the one seed right now, winner is going to play either Dallas or the Clippers. Right now, the three seed, the two seed, you're going to play, you know, the play-in winner, which who knows who it'll be. It could be Phoenix, could be Sacramento, could be New Orleans, could be the Lakers, could be the Warriors. You really don't know who you're going to play. And then you have, obviously, the three seed where you're playing either probably the Pelicans or the Suns, more than likely would be one of those two teams. So you kind of look at it as a situation of, at this point, you're just playing for home court in the playoffs, because I don't really think there's an advantage to the one seed besides that in the Western Conference. And I think Minnesota, more than Denver, more than OKC, knows that we need that home court. We don't want to have to, if it comes down to it, go to Denver in a best of seven, right, and have Denver have home court. Because if you look at the teams in the Western Conference, I don't think it's really hard to argue. Maybe outside – I'm not even going to say the Warriors, because the Warriors have stunk at home this year. But Denver and Oklahoma City are probably two of the best home court advantages you can have. And if they get a one or two seed, they're going to have home court advantage besides, you know, the only – you know, match up when they play each other. So with Minnesota, even though they're on the road tonight in Denver, I think this is a do or die kind of must win spot for them, because I don't think they're really looking at potential matchups. I think Minnesota's looking at, we need to secure that number one overall seed, that home court advantage. And I think that's more a kind of important right now for them than who they're actually going to play, what the matchups are going to be like. Because Minnesota, like I said, we've been doubting them all year, and they just keep winning. Like, they're the one seed in the West right now, and April 10th with two, three games to go. So it's a big deal. And I still don't think I'm going to pick them to go far in the playoffs, just because I don't know how it's going to work with Gobert and Towns come playoffs. Anthony Edwards scoring 51 is a very encouraging sign. We've seen him blow up like that before. He's got to be more consistent. He's got to be more consistent when it comes to the postseason right now. Getting Cat back is going to help, I think, a lot. But the West is so tough right now. And if Minnesota falls to the, you know, the two or even the three, which I think based on tiebreakers, I think probably two would be more likely if they lose tonight to Denver. They could be playing Phoenix. They could be playing Phoenix. They could be playing the Kings.
That Phoenix team, I have no idea what to do with
either. I don't know what to do with any of
playoff
these,
time. I don't know what to do with any of these playing teams,
but I'll tell you right now, if it's Phoenix versus Minnesota, I wouldn't be shocked if Phoenix was favored in that series.
Well, just think about this. Like, just from a – I mean, the Celtics, obviously, 62 wins. They're going to end in the mid-60s most likely. Yeah. And the Wolves at the top have 55 wins. So that's the stark difference. But even if you take that out, the second-place team is the Bucks at 48 wins in the East. The Mavs are fifth with 49. The Pelicans are sixth with 47. And the play-in team in the East, the two bottom play-ins, the Lakers, 45 wins, the Warriors, 44 wins. You go to the East, it's the Bulls, 37, the Hawks, 36. So it's all, like, every team is going to finish above 500 in the Western Conference. We had that one year. It was the year that the Suns went, like, 40. I can't remember what their record was. Something crazy where they had, like, 48 wins or 49 wins or something like that, and they ended up the 9th seed and missing the playoffs. That's what it feels like again this year, where the West is just so competitive. And that's why I don't know what you can make of all these top seeds when it gets into these matchups, because it's not like they're playing, you know, bomb teams. Like, they're playing really quality teams who, if you put them, you know, if you put the Kings in the Eastern Conference, are they the 3 seed right now? Like, with playing an Eastern Conference schedule, are the Lakers a 3 seed or a 4 seed in the Eastern Conference? Like, we're back to that point where it doesn't feel like the East is on par with the Western Conference, especially the top teams.
Right. I mean, outside of the Celtics, right? Outside of the Celtics. There's a bigger gap between the 1 seed, the Celtics, and the 2 seed in the East right now, Milwaukee, than the 1 seed in the Western Conference, who's Minnesota right now, and the 10th seed, the Golden State Warriors. That's absurd, man. That's so many talented teams in the conference. It's going to be a war in the West.
Yeah. So the matchups are going to be huge. The season ends on Saturday. We'll know everything by then. We'll get to a playoff preview and everything else there. Today we got to do our awards. The awards are pretty much wrapped up. No one's winning or losing any awards this week, I don't think. I feel like everybody's kind of decided where they're at.
Yeah.
At this point. So we're kind of where we're yes. And so we're kind of where we're at. We're gonna start off with the MVP. And we're gonna do this with our picks.
If we had a vote,
Happy Hour Hoops will have a vote and we'll make it. And we'll get there and we'll make a vote. But right now we don't. So we're making it on here. We'll make it official. Each of us will. And then we can kind of give a prediction on what we think will happen after. But I think I'm going to mark down what each of us pick.
And don't worry, we'll get Donnie's picks too after this.
Yeah,
we'll make sure we track Donnie down, get his picks.
Yeah, we're going to get all of our picks out there and we'll post it this week as the season rounds up and we can get our awards picks out. But we're starting with the big one. The NBA MVP. We've talked about it a little bit, whole segment last week. Steve, who would you pick as your NBA MVP?
I mean, this is obvious. If I have a vote, I'm picking Luka. I think he's done everything to earn the MVP. I mean, the narrative just feels like it changes every day. And I don't want to turn this into Steve doing Luka MVP talk because I've exhausted it at this point. There's only so much I can say, right? It's like, they can't win. Now the Mavs are winning, and now the whole narrative's changing again. I mean, the fact of the matter is he's averaging the most points, rebounds, and assists combined of any player in the modern era. He's averaging pretty much close to a 34-point triple-double. His defense has improved drastically this year. His shooting splits have improved this year. He's leading the NBA in points per game by about 4. He's second in the NBA in assists per game. The Mavs have been arguably the best team since the All-Star break, with the number 1 ranked defense, number 3 ranked offense, I believe. He's made his teammates around him better, and he finally got a good team. Luka 14-1 in his last 15. Everyone wants to talk about, SGA leads the NBA in 30-point games, while Luka leads the NBA in 35-point games and 40-point games and 45-point games. And in all those SGA truthers, he only scores 31. Luka leads the NBA in 32-point games by 10. By 10, because SGA can't get over the 31-point mark. I mean, Luka has done everything I think he has to deserve an MVP. I think this is an all-time great season. And for some reason, he's experiencing voter fatigue of someone who's never won it before. I don't really know why. I'm not going to try to argue it anymore. I think Nikola Jokic is having a fantastic season. I'm not going to take anything away from it. But I don't think if you look at the numbers and if you look at, you know, how he's been playing, it's hard to argue that Luka shouldn't be the MVP. He'll get my vote. And what's going to be disgusting is when I see the total votes, and somehow SGA will probably have more first place votes for him. Because like I said, the NBA is just out to get Luka. But in my mind, I'm picking him for MVP. I think Jokic is going to win it. The betting odds are kind of showing that it's locked up at this point, which disgusts me. But Luka's getting my vote. We knew that. And like I said, I've exhausted the MVP talk. I'll make all the points and I'll probably continue to share stats and stuff on Twitter and all my arguments. But for now, I'll keep it short, simple. I'll pick Luka. He probably won't win it.
I knew that you were going that way. We've had the discussion. We've talked about it at length where we wanted to go with our MVP picks. My only holdup with you having Luka there was team success, and now they're a successful team. Like, they're a 5 seed, potentially a 4 seed, depending on how the end of the season goes. One of the best teams in the West, one of the most complete teams since the break. The All-Star break. I think I'm going with Luka too. I think if I had a vote today, I would pick Luka Doncic. I don't think it's gonna happen.
Yeah, that's
where I've been at with this argument and been leaning towards Jokic. But it's hard to just ignore what he's had to do this. Yeah. And if you took Jokic off the Nuggets, I like to look at it this way: they wouldn't be anything either. But this right. Mavs team for everything that they wanted to do this year and to make it work with Kyrie. And still increase his numbers the way he has and everything else and just make everybody better around him. I think that you have to reward the guy for his play this year. And I think it's close. I think the vote should be really close between Luka and Jokic. And I don't think you'd be wrong. It won't be. I think it should be really close. And they're going to give it to Jokic because they want to cement him basically as this generation's guy and give him the 3 and 4 years and whatever else. Like, whatever ulterior motives that always go into this vote. But if you've just been watching NBA basketball every single night, Luka Doncic is the best player, and you can't argue that he's not as valuable to his team as Jokic is. Both teams would be a mess, would not be in the play-in conversation without those guys. And I think that their value is pretty equal. I don't think that you can – that's always, like, for me when I'm – deciding between awards and especially MVP in every sport, I'm looking at, okay, if you took him off the team, what would it be? Like that's what it comes down to. That's why I didn't like the Lamar Jackson case for MVP this year, because that team was very good around him. He didn't have outstanding stats. There wasn't a lot of things that you could say, like, you know, was the reason for that. And it's not even a Josh Allen thing, whatever. It's more just like, what are we doing? Like, what is this award actually becoming? Right. It's the same thing here. In my mind, and I think Luka is deserving. And if it came down to it, and I had a vote and had to make a pick, I'd have to do it. I'd have to pick him. Like, I would feel wrong if I didn't do it this year. So, Steve, you have helped convince me, but it's also just the play, and it's also I wanted to see the team.
I think Luka's done a lot of the convincing lately.
No, but all I wanted to do was see the team start winning more. Like, that's all I asked for, and they did that. Like, they're going to be a top 5-4 seed. In the West, in a more competitive Western Conference.
And that's the thing I think that got me exhausted with arguing it is so many were talking about, oh, the Mavs are the 5 seed in the West. I'm not picking a 5 seed to win MVP. Well, first off, Jokic won his first MVP when it's a 6 seed. Yep. And secondly, the Mavs, you talk about them being a 5 seed. They were one of the more injured teams in the first half of the season and playing with a completely different roster than they have now. Since the break, since the deadline, when they've had their full roster, Jake, they've been one of the best teams in the NBA. In fact, they've been the second best record after the Boston Celtics. And if you want to use the seed argument, oh, I'm not going to pick a 5 seed in the West when MVP, you put the Mavs in the East, they're the 2 seed. And I'm not just playing Easter teams. I'm playing just their win-loss record right now. So don't try to tell me this whole team success, oh, Luka can't win. Like, he's shown that. And he's shown, I think, the opposite of that of, oh, what he can do with a actual competent team around him. I mean, 14-1 in the last 15, they've been the hottest team in the NBA since the deadline. That's where I get frustrated is because I think people are just changing their argument. And this was the big thing I said last week, too, when we had this lengthier discussion, is that, you know, I'm fine with people having their opinions. I get it. But what I can't stand is stubbornness when you're proven wrong. Right. Yes. And that's the one thing where if you want to find something to argue and you have valid points, that's fine. But when you just change your argument just so it goes along with your original belief because you're too stubborn to admit you're wrong, or you're too stubborn to admit, you know, something changed or something happened and your opinion has thus changed, that's when I get frustrated. And that's what we have just seen over the past month with Luka. I mean, also too, I it's hard to, you know, keep bringing up more points, but back-to-back player of the month. If there's anything that says MVP, like when we're getting into the home stretch of the season, back-to-back player of the month, by the way, he's in the Western Conference. Nikola Jokic does play in that conference, guys. Just breaking news. They do play in the same conference. He won back-to-back player of the month against Nikola Jokic. Like, there's just so many reasons to point him towards MVP. I don't think he's actually going to get it, which breaks my heart because I think he's having an all-time great season. And I will say – that there are two awards this year, Jake, that I think we're going to have all-time robberies for. I think people are going to look back at this season and be like, how was Luka not the MVP? Oh. And there's going to be another award coming up that people are going to look back on and be like, why wasn't this guy that? So that's all I got to say about the MVP. I've exhausted all efforts. I'm picking Luka.
We're both picking Luka. I think it should be time. There's nothing wrong with picking Jokic. He's going to get the award. Jokic has all the fancy stats that are helping him out. That definitely goes into it, but it's not far enough away from Luka's that you can argue that as a differentiator. We'll see what happens when it comes down to it, but I'm sticking with it. I've seen enough from this Mavs team, especially lately, mm-hmm. and it's the right pick, I think, and we'll see what happens going there. Bloomy's with us. He's going to get robbed.
He's going to get robbed.
We think so, too. Yeah. Last night, 21 with 4 to go in the first.
He's insane, bro. What, 39, 12, and 10 or something? I don't know. Another almost 40-point triple-double. Like, it's just crazy with him.
Sixth man of the year. I think this is a pretty easy pick.
Yeah. I think there's two names
okay. you
can throw out here. I'm assuming we're on the same name. I'll let you say who it is, because if I agree, I'll just let you talk about it. But I think there is two names that you could throw out here.
I think Malik Monk has to get it because he's just the way that he was all year long. Nas Reed is a close.
That's the other name.
I want to pick Nas. My heart wants to pick Nas. I love Nas Reed. Nas Reed, by the way, WrestleMania both nights this weekend. Someone just had a Nas Reed sign in the fan.
That's amazing, dude.
Whoever did that, so real. I'm like, is that Nas Reed? Like, that's how far this man has come along. But Malik Monk was just like, I mean, he was incredible off the bench for Sacramento, earning his contract. Yeah. The way that he kind of revived his career and everything else has been amazing, but just the shooting and the kind of, you know, he's kind of the spark plug you think of now in the league. Like, we've had so many great players in that role throughout their careers, and he is really that guy. It comes along with the sharp shooting. I think that he's going to get the award. I would pick him for it, but it's very close with him and Nas. And the way Nas has played without – Cat too has been really impressive. Right. He's had some great games, but I'm gonna lean Malik because they've needed that. Like with Herder's just had not a great year. They've had guys that just didn't have great years, as good of years offensively as last year. Not him though. He's really kept it up in that spot, and it's kind of perfect role for him.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm picking Malik Monk for the simple fact of the matter is that I think, you know, when you look at sixth man of the year, a lot of times I look at someone who can impact the game coming off the bench, but when they come off the bench, they are so good, you keep them in the rest of the game, right? And that's exactly what Malik Monk does. He comes off the bench at the start of the games. He kind of gets, you know, his usual rotation with De'Aaron Fox, how they like to split it. But there, Jake, I think you could argue there are some games where you'll be watching midway through the second quarter. You're like, oh, Malik Monk's better than Fox tonight. Like, Monk's just better than Fox. And the Kings will do that in the second half. Malik Monk will pretty much get the entire run of the second half with the starts. Now, Fox will play too, but a lot of it will go through Malik Monk. I think he's going to win Sixth Man of the Year also too. I feel like the games he misses, especially when he misses games with injury, the Kings are a completely different team than when he's healthy. With Minnesota, I don't feel the same way as strongly with Nas Reed. Oh, I'll give Nas Reed credit, as I think Nas Reed coming off the bench can impact the game in a way, but he also is a great, like you said, when they have an injury, when Towns is out or when Gobert is out or when anyone's really out, they just kind of change their lineup, whether it's a guard who's out or whether it's a big man who's out. They just kind of change the lineup and just throw Nas Reed in there because they know he can handle that amount of work. They know he can handle those minutes. So I think Nas Reed has a great case, but I'm going with Malik Monk as well. I think Malik Monk has just had too many games this year where he's came off the bench in the first half, and next thing you know, he scored like 25 in the second half because of just how explosive he can be. I'll take Malik Monk. I will say third honorable mention, even though it's not really close, but I think Bobby Portis has been very good off the bench for Milwaukee year. I don't think he's anywhere close in terms of winning Sixth Man of the Year, but I got to give Bobby Portis a little bit of flowers because he's been very impactful off the bench for Milwaukee.
Yeah, Bobby Portis has been awesome this year. And like you said, Nas Reed really just does everything. Like he's a cheat code on 2K. If you have 2K, go pick up Nas Reed for your team. You will not disappoint. The fact that they've been the best team in the West kind of helps him in that. Mm-hmm. He's only plus 105 to minus 155, so I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, it's close.
But 15 points per game off the bench is, I mean, that's impressive.
Yeah.
He's been an elite scorer. If Monk was a starter in the league, I think he could get 18 to 20 points a game.
I think he's Terry Rozier if he starts.
Yeah, that's a great call.
I think he's Terry Rozier if he starts.
That's a great call. Plus 500. Yeah, that's a great point, too. He's exactly. Finishing games for them, too. Yeah. And that shows how important he is, especially with the way Herter's played this year. Like, Herter had a great year last year, not having it as much this year. And Monk has really stepped up for that team. The Kings are such a weird team. Like, they still feel like it doesn't feel much like different than last year, but the rest of the West kind of just got better around them. Mm-hmm. Their record last year was 48 and 34 at the end of the season. Right now, they are 45 and 34. Yeah, I mean, they could finish with the same record as last year. As like, that's right. The thing. They're
it's
the
just
same
the West got better.
Yeah. So, fun team. That'll be fun to watch in the playoffs. We're both going Malik Monk. We're going to have some difference here, but it's not on the next one. Rookie of the year. There's only one choice.
This can be 5 seconds. I'll make it a little longer just to give him respect. Victor Wembanyama had some of the most hype coming into a season of, I think, anyone, right? In recent memory, probably since LeBron in terms of the hype. And Jake, there were a lot of doubters. There are a lot of people saying, oh, wait till he plays against NBA players. I don't think there's been a player in my lifetime who has had the amount of hype Wemby had and still exceeded expectations. And if you want to use the lazy argument of, oh, the Spurs aren't a good team, the Spurs have ever, yeah, Wemby doesn't have a great team around him. He's been fantastic on the court. And the Spurs, when Wemby's on the court and when he's off the court, night and day different. But I'll tell you what, man, in terms of impacting them on the offensive end and defensive end, I don't think we've had a player like Wemby with this much hype and then exceeding those expectations. We talked about at the start of the year that Chat maybe, you know, could give him a little bit of a run. And I think the first half of the year, there was a definitely time where it was like, okay, 1A, 1B with Chat. No, it's Wemby and it's a gap. And I love Chet, and I think Chet's going to be a great player. And I also want to give a little shout-out to Brandon Miller, who's had a phenomenal second half of the year for Charlotte, who's been an absolute bucket. But it's Wemby's world, and we're just living in it. It's Wemby, and it's not close. Obviously, we both agree with this. I don't even think you can bet on it right now. That's how favored the odds are in Wemby's direction. It's just Wemby, man. He's been unbelievable.
Yep. Well said. It's been some of my most thrilling experiences watching the NBA this year. I've bet a lot on the Spurs, especially the second mm-hmm. half of the year where they've been in close in a lot of these games. Bloomy, I've said this to see, imagine Wemby when he's 3 years. Yeah. I mean, no, imagine him with some muscle and
it's terrifying.
And the thing is, the thing that I was going to get to, that's a great point to go off of there too, Bloomy, because the biggest thing for me is when the IQ starts to click and he just starts figuring things out on the go, like figuring out how these defenses are attacking him, because he's such a great passer. I mean, obviously it's great to be 7'4" and passing over everybody, but he has great vision.
Yes.
And you give him some players around him that can hit open shots and stuff. His stat lines are going to be like Jokic every
he's going to have right he's going to have quadruple doubles. We're going to have to be prepared for multiple quadruple doubles. And not only that, dude, his maturity. That's the one thing like Popovich praised about him, right? As soon as they got Wemby before the season even started, he goes, this guy's as mature as like anyone I've ever coached.
Yeah. Just think of this, man. It's right now looking at on Pro Basketball Reference, I'm looking at these stats. His career highs already. He's already has 40-point game. He's already had a 20-rebound game. He's already had a 10-assist game. He's already had a 6-steal game. He's already had a 10-block game. This is in year one, man. Like, there are guys that never touch any of those in their career for what they do. And he's got it in year one all over the board. It's going to be fun. He's so much fun to watch. I can't wait to watch him in the Olympics this year. Like, as Bloomy mentioned, he is French. It's going to be the French team is going to be.
The foreign players are just taking over. They've just been taking over this league.
The world's not ready. The world's not ready for him. The things that he's been able to do on the court has been it's just been insane. They've had some great games against top teams. I can't wait to see what they try to do to put a team around him this summer. They're honestly the most interesting team to me this summer because they've got money to spend, moves to make, and you have to take it. This guy's ready to win next year. You have to try to win next
year. Build a team around him. Put some players around him because you have a generational talent.
Let's go to Coach of the Year, which I think, you know, it's
tough.
It's a really tough spot. We're looking at the odds here in Oklahoma City. Mark Daniels, the favorite.
Yeah.
Joe Mazzulla, a little disrespected there at that plus 6,000, I think, because regardless of what you want to say about the talent of that team, when you got 62 wins, you're doing something right. Yes, Adrian Griffin.
Yeah, right. Be coach of the year. He should at least be on the board.
Do that?
To vote for.
So I'm interested. What is your pick for Coach of the Year? Because there's a lot of good options here.
So preseason, I actually had Mark Daigneault. You remember how high I was on the Thunder in the preseason? I thought they were going to be, you know, big surprise team, and I was like, well, if that's the case, then the coach has to, you know, win Coach of the Year. And then the other one I mentioned preseason as honorable mention was Ime Udoka, which I believe he's like fifth or sixth right now. His odds are crazy. He's not going to win it. But if Houston made the play-in, I think then maybe he has a case. But I think there's one we've kind of overlooked the whole year. And Jamal Mosley, man.
Yeah.
Jamal Mosley, the Orlando Magic. I feel like they've somehow still gone under the radar. I know people are talking about the Magic a little bit more and Bad Carroll's having a hell of a year. The Magic have had like the best defense in the NBA. And when I think of defense, I think of coaching, right? And I will give my vote to Jamal Mosley for the fact of the matter is here. Like I said, this is my vote. Now, who I think is going to win, this is my vote. I'm giving it to Jamal Mosley because I think the Oklahoma City Thunder just have a lot more talented players. A lot of the reason I thought OKC was going to, you know, blow up this year is because SGA is an absolute superstar. Jalen Williams, we saw we did. And then they got a healthy Chet Holmgren. And it just felt like everything just kind of clicked for that team. The Orlando Magic, Jake, it's the same kind of group of guys from last year. They've just all gotten better, right? Bancaro built on his rookie of the year. You've got the Wagners who have been played great. Jalen Suggs has finally started to look like the type of player we thought Jalen Suggs was going to be. You got Cole Anthony, you got Fultz. You got a lot of solid options on the Orlando Magic. But I do think Bancaro will become a superstar. I don't think he's a true superstar yet. But I give so much credit to Mosley and just the defense that the Magic have turned into. This is one of the best defensive teams in the NBA, if not the best. And they have soared kind of in the Eastern Conference to the fact where we were like, this might be a borderline playoff team. I can't remember what their over-under was for wins at the start of the year, but I want to say it was like the mid-30s. Yeah, and we're looking at a team that's one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference right now, man. I believe they have 46 wins. They absolutely blew past their win total. Yep. I got to give the Orlando Magic credit. And like I said, if I have a vote, I always want to try to give the teams credit that I think deserve it on the year. And I think this is the best spot to kind of pick the Magic. So I'll go Jamal Mosley.
It's a great pick. I thought you were going to stick with your original Daniel.
I was going to, but
he's plus 550. And like you said, the East, they're one of the best teams in the East. They have been all year long. They're a force and they're not going anywhere either. Like this is a young team. This is OKC East really like the young talent they have around. Bancaro and Franz are awesome two guys. Anybody would want to build around. So it's a great pick. I'm going Chris Finch. I'm going with Minnesota because OKC, as much as it's been a great job for Daniel, and it's a surprise to see them as good as they are this year. We kind of saw the pieces, you know, having SGA as a star player and everything else. Mm-hmm. I feel like the infrastructure and Chet coming back, I feel like the infrastructure was there.
Right.
For them.
And
to
I think
have
we
booth,
maybe
right?
saw it before everyone else, right?
Bloomy time in Missoula and Daniel. That's mm-hmm. both great picks. And I almost put Missoula here too. That I wanted to give him the flowers. And so Daniel has all the thing. He's the favorite for a reason. I don't think that I could have ever – I thought Minnesota could be good this year potentially. I didn't think that they would be this good this fast have the kind of defense they have. And, right. Yes, Gobert being the anchor helps that. But I think Finch has designed a defense and designed a scheme to his players that has been so just suffocating for teams this year. And then allowing Ant to just be himself on this team in the way that, like, Ant's a guy where if he's in the wrong organization on the wrong team, it could be crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, just the personality he is and everything else. Like, he's the ultimate alpha, right? And if things weren't going right, I can't imagine what Anthony Edwards would be like if this year kind of went down the drain or anything like that. I think that Anthony Edwards is a better player today because of the coaching from Chris Finch and what he's been able to do with this team. And it's the reason that he's going to be an All-NBA candidate and everything else. Like, Edwards is a great talent. I think Finch has built a great scheme around him as their leading scorer to where he doesn't have to, like, look at the rest of this team. It's not like there's like a guy that you'd point out besides Edwards that's like, oh, that's a lights out guy, a great second option that you'd want scoring the ball on your team.
And you wouldn't call Towns a second option at this point?
I guess he's a second option, yeah. But like in these later moments of mm-hmm. games where you're do you trust Karl Anthony Towns at the end of a game?
No. No.
And ideally, I think I would have Kat as a third option on a good team. I think he's overpaid for his role and everything. And I think he is like he's not the third option on this team, but he's the third best player and third most important player on this team right
what
now.
Because like, of Gobert's defense and everything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And offensively, I don't think, you know, they do run offense through him during late in the game, but it all centers around Edwards. We've seen it at Karl Anthony Towns led, you know, team, and it wasn't with Gobert in the past and everything else, but it's and I'm a Towns hater, and he's had a good year. He's on the All-Star team and everything, so that's part of it as much as anything else. But I think Edwards, the work that they've done to kind of maximize Edwards, maximize Towns, especially even while he's out, to stay afloat too, and this they haven't felt like they've missed a step mm-hmm. at all. I got to give it to Finch. I got to give it to him. I think it's going to be a really close vote. Maybe Daniels get these minus 230. So maybe the voters are leading that way more, but it feels like this could go a lot of different ways depending on how the voters kind of justify their votes here.
Yeah, I think you can make a case for any of the top three. I think you could kind of make a case. It's kind of crazy that you kind of have to make a case for Joe Mazzulla after everything.
Yeah,
I think part of the reason that he's much more of a long shot is because how talented the Celtics roster is. But the fact of the matter is, Jake, they have 62 wins. I mean, they have 7 more wins than the second best team in the NBA. That is a crazy sizable gap there. You got to give credit somewhere. You can't just tell me that, oh, they're just a really good team, but we're not going to give them credit anywhere. We're going to discredit the players. We're going to discredit the coach. So I think you can make a case for any of the four. I think Finch would probably be third on my ballot after Mosley and Daniel. I would probably put Finch. I think, like I said, I just feel like the Magic just don't have as much talent as Minnesota and OKC, but they've really made up for it on the defensive end. They've just made up for it in the way they play this year.
Yeah.
Where they're getting the best out of pretty much everyone on the team, where that's where I give Mosley the edge.
It's a great pick. I any of those guys are very, very deserving. And that blew me here with, I think this is at Mazzulla. Players might be good, but a good coach got a coach. That's 100%, 100%. Like, that team could be much different this year. Joe Mazzulla has done, and he's learned on the job. Like, last year, I think there were some growing pains and everything else. Mm-hmm. I think that guy has figured it out now, and he has a great roster, but he has done a great job with them as well. Especially integrating new guys. Like, it doesn't matter how talented they are. They had basically a completely new team, a completely new starting roster, and like putting in Holiday, putting in Porzingis into this year. It's been awesome to see. Defensive player of the year. This could go.
We
might go different ways here.
Yeah, you know, I think we probably will. This is where I told you that I have two all-time robberies, right? I have two that I feel are gonna, we're gonna look back and be like, how did they not win? The first is Luka MVP this season. Yep. He's having. The second, I think Victor Wembanyama should win Defensive Player of the Year. And right now, if you look at the odds in NBA MVP and Defensive Player of the Year, it's heavily favored Jokic and then Rudy Gobert for Defensive Player of the Year. I don't understand it. And I get it. I get the team success. I get how good they've been defensively according to the metrics with Gobert on the court. I understand that. But with Wemby on the court versus Wemby off the court, the defense, I think, is third for the Spurs when he's on versus 27th when he's off. I mean, it's a wild third, gap. Man. Not only that, he is crushing the NBA lead in blocks. He's crushing the NBA lead in stocks, steals, plus blocks. He has, like you said, he's had multiple games where he's had five blocks and five steals. He's had multiple games where he's had like three plus steals, where he's had three plus blocks. We're talking about a guy who, you know, almost had quadruple doubles. He also had a game where I think he was 20, 25, 15, 5, 5, and 5. Just like absurd. I mean, absurd. But not only that, and this is where I say numbers aren't everything. Sometimes you just got to watch the games too. Mm-hmm. Not only that, the way he impacts, just his presence impacts the game on the defensive end of the court is something I don't think I've ever seen before. NBA players for the first time in their lives are afraid of driving on someone. And it's remarkable because it's his rookie season and he's just so aware of how guys are going to try to attack them, how they're going to try to score on him. And he's just so smart about his blocks. Yes, he's bigger than everyone. And obviously Gobert, you know, that's kind of what his whole mold has been, right? He's just been bigger, just been stronger. And he just knows when you're going to go up for the shot. He just knows how to block it, knows how to play good defense, even if he doesn't get the block. But in my mind, man, I'll be honest with you, I think Wemby's defense, and we're going to look back in this, is one of a generational defender where, yeah, Rudy Gobert has been one of the best defenders in the NBA. But you know what? He's got his limitations, too. He can't really guard outside the three-point arc. You know who can? Victor Wembanyama. Rudy Gobert, you know, sometimes he's not too quick. You can blow by him if you get that quick first step. You know who you can't do that to? Victor Wembanyama. Victor Wembanyama can be looking the complete other direction, know exactly when you're going to try to take the backdoor cut or the back shot behind him, and he's going to block it. And then he's going to turn that block into points on the other end because of his athleticism. I get Rudy Gobert's favorite because of how good the Timberwolves as a team has been defensively, but this is not, we're not talking about the team defense player of the year. We're talking about the defensive player of the year. In my mind, it's Victor Wembanyama. I think it's going to be another all-time robbery.
This is where you have to go eye test as everything you're saying. Like sometimes you just got to look at the awards and be like, if it's close between the player, what is the big difference? If you watch Wemby and Gobert playing defense, Wemby is, does, like you just said, he can do everything defensively. Yeah. I'm completely with you. That's why I meant we're going different from the odds, because the odds are this is going to be Gobert's award. He's minus 3,500. Yeah. He's going to win there. It's because of team success, blah, blah, blah. Gobert wins this award all the time. Wemby is going to dominate this award for years.
Oh, yeah. He'll get his fair share.
We're in complete lockstep. And Bloomy's with us too. Wemby over Rudy 100%. If you just watch basketball and watch the games, like, no, the Spurs team defense hasn't been great. Imagine, like you said, imagine what they would be without Wemby this whole year. Like, they'd be getting put up 140, 150 on them every single night. He single-handedly carries them defensively. He's their complete anchor. Rudy has a great defensive team. And as I just mentioned, Chris Finch, a guy who schemed up a really good defense to funnel everything into Rudy around it. Wemby is going to be able to do that for years and years to come. And I think he's been the better defensive player this year. So we're in line there, Steve.
It's almost like they don't want to give it to him because they know he's going to get them down the road, right? Probably, and that's how I feel honestly with the Wemby Defensive Player of the Year. It's like, oh, we're just not going to give it to him his rookie year because he's going to win Rookie of the Year. He'll get his defensive players later down the road. Which, honestly, that's so stupid. It's so stupid, the agendas they have for the NBA awards.
The voters drive me insane. This is one you can't really – this award, the last award here before we get into our All-NBA Clutch Player of the Year, because you can't really argue it. Well, Nikola Vucevic, still got most defensive improved player
too. We still got to get
and most improved
too. We can't
clutch player of the year though. You can't really argue this because it's like who has like it's who's doing well in the clutch, and then you kind of go from there.
So it's weird, right?
Because, like I know it's not exactly that, but like it is kind of like the statistics of the clutch. But go ahead, what were you going
to
say?
It's weird because it also, I guess, comes up to how often are you in the clutch, right? There's a lot of times where there's teams where just games aren't really close. I know the Mavericks have one of the best clutch records, but they haven't played in as many clutch games as some of the, you know, other teams here. The favorite, Steph Curry. He's not like an overwhelming favorite. I think he's minus 150. DeMar DeRozan's plus 110 is the second favorite. And then I think it's a big jump.
Huge drop off.
Then you got SGA. I think Jokic is up there. Kevin Durant. I think LeBron. But it's kind of like you said, it's kind of hard to argue, right? Curry, he averages the most points in the clutch, so that's kind of what you got to go off of for exactly. A clutch player. You got to go off points, probably shooting percentage as well. It's weird for me, right? Because we're talking about the two favorites for quote unquote clutch player of the year, and they're both 10 seeds in the play-in right now, right? That doesn't sound too clutch to me. And I'm not trying to disrespect DeMar DeRozan or Steph Curry. They're two of my favorite basketball players since I started watching basketball. But it's just weird that we're having a discussion of clutch player of the year for two 10 seeds. I don't really know because, you know, what do you go off of? Do you go off of buzzer beaters? Do you go off of those key baskets? Or do you just go off of, like, you know, points scored in the clutch? And in my mind, it's going to be one of the two, Steph or DeMar, pick your poison. I think Steph's probably going to win it because everyone thinks Steph Curry, they see him hit a big three. They're like, oh, he's clutch. They won't talk about the games where he's like 1 of 5 from the floor in the fourth quarter. They'll talk about the ones where he's like 4 of 4 and 3 of 3 from three. So you can go Steph Curry, but, and this is hilarious because, like I said, I've been discrediting him for the MVP the whole year. But Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has made his fair share of game-winning shots this year. He, when the Thunder need a bucket, he's kind of been their go-to guy. Now, granted, a lot of it has been drawing fouls to get to the free throw line, but that's still a degree of clutch if their basket's in a close game. They've won a lot of close games because of that. So I think it's crazy that he's such a far, you know, in the odds compared to Curry or DeRozan. I'm gonna give Curry clutch player of the year. And I'm not trying to get JBC upset with this because JBC, I'll win you back. I'll win you back when we talk about most improved. But I'll give Steph Curry clutch player of the year.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So the Bulls are the most clutch team in the league. These two players playing first and second, everything you said about their stats and everything. A lot of clutch points come because you play in a lot of close games because good teams are blowing everybody out. They don't need to play in clutch time. Like, it's not like SGA or, you know, Jason Tatum, right? Not that Tatum's up for this award, but like guys like on all these great teams don't play in the clutch a lot because they're winning by 15 and you're not in clutch time. So that helps a lot of this for the two play-in teams and everything else. If you look at it though, I think that if these two guys are this close in the ranking, you got to just look at it like who would you want with the ball in the last 5 minutes to take all these shots? And I love DeMar, but I'm going with Steph Curry too.
Yeah, like it's hard
to go against it. But yeah, it's a weird award still to me. Don't really understand it.
Yeah, I don't like it. A clutch shouldn't be two. I'm sorry, it shouldn't be two 10 seeds. It shouldn't.
No,
they want to discredit Luka for MVP because they're the 5 seed. Clutch shouldn't be two 10 seeds. You should. This should be honestly. This should probably be a Celtics award. It should be who's out in Celtics.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's why it's weird because like you can only be in the clutch so much if your team is in close games all the time. Yep. So you're discrediting good teams basically, no matter what. So it's just a strange award. We'll give it to Steph. Most improved player. Well, you already kind of said where you're going with this. I'll lead it off. I'm not going that way. It's Tyrese Maxey for me. He's the heavy favorite. And as much as I thought Maxey was going to be good this year and be unleashed a little bit with Harden gone, never imagined this. So I give it to him running away. But I'm guessing you're making a case for a Chicago Bull here.
Oh, I'm making a case for Coby White. I'm making out Coby White, who pretty much kind of saved his career this year, where he was almost labeled a bust coming into this season. And now Coby White is – you know, the 1A, 1B situation with DeMar DeRozan. And there's multiple times where Kobe White's the guy. We're talking about DeMar DeRozan is winning clutch player of the year. There's multiple times where Kobe White's the guy late games that's helping this team. The reason I'm not going to give it to Maxey, and I think this is the biggest reason, Jake, is because Maxey was playing fantastic. He was making the jump when Harden's no longer the team. When Embiid was healthy, Maxey was playing fantastic. But what did we see when Embiid got hurt? Philly fell from the 2 seed all the way down to the 8 seed. And this is partly because Maxey couldn't take on the load of carrying a team. What did we see with the Chicago Bulls when Zach LaVine got hurt? When DeMar DeRozan was out? When they had multiple injuries, Kobe White just stepped up and was putting up video game type numbers. Not only that, we're talking about most improved. We're not talking about best player, right? Maxey kind of established himself the previous year where it was like, all right, Maxey already made that leap. Maybe not a gigantic leap, but he made a sizable leap where it was noticed. And whereas to the point where it was noticed, where Philly was like, all right, he's going to be our number two. And it was, and that was going into the season, that was going to be the case. Maxey's going to be the number two. He's going to be able to be unleashed now as the number two with Embiid. And we saw that when Embiid was healthy. But then, like I said, when Embiid got hurt, Maxey had his big games because he was kind of the only one there besides Tobias Harris. But he also had his games where he kind of shied away. It was like, is he a true number one? Kobe White, like I said, went from being labeled as potentially a bust to doubling his points per game, pretty much doubling his rebounds per game, pretty much doubling his assists per game. His efficiency got a lot better. And not only that, he went from only starting 2 games last year. Jake, he was coming off the bench. He was starting only 2 games last year. I think of the 74 games he played this year, there was only 1 game he did not start. He started 75 of 76 games for the Chicago Bulls. Part of the reason the Bulls are even a play-in team is because of Kobe White. He developed his outside three-point shot to the point where it went from being kind of, you know, something he didn't really use at all last year, very inconsistent, to, hey, he's going to shoot a bunch of threes now. He's probably going to be locked in for 3+ 3-pointers made per game. He's averaging nearly 20 points a game. Now, he's a guy, too. If you need 10 rebounds, he can get 10 rebounds in a game. If you need him to be the playmaker, he can get 10 assists in a game. You need him to take over and score, he can do that. He can shoot outside. He can drive. And we're talking about improvement here, right? Improvement. We knew what Maxey could do last year. He just got a little bit better at it this year. Last year, we thought Kobe White, is he even going to be in like rotations after this season? Is he going to be someone we can trust with big minutes? His minutes went from 23 a game last year, Jake, to 36 a game this year. He's playing some of the most minutes of anyone in the NBA. If that doesn't scream improvement, then what does? Doubling points, doubling rebounds, doubling assists, doubling three-pointers made, doubling minutes played, essentially, going from coming off the bench to being a regular starter, and not just a regular starter, the second best option on your team, and some nights the number one option. How does that not scream most improved player? That's why I just feel like I can't stand these NBA awards, because they're agenda-based, I feel like, in this mind, and they're just like, oh, this is what we want, so we're just going to write it. You're just – but that's – it's not following suit. So you know what? I said there were going to be 2 all-time robberies where we'll look back on it. I know I know most people don't look back on most improved, but I don't care, because this is going to be another robbery in my mind. I think Kobe White has made a case as good as any for most improved. You're telling me you're going from potential bust to potential all-star the next year, where Kobe White, if he had this season at this, you know, like coming into this next season, if he puts up these numbers again and he makes another little jump, we're looking at him as a potential all-star.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, it most improved for me is Kobe White. Once again, he's not going to win it. But if Steve had a vote and his voice needed to be heard, I'm writing Kobe White is most improved, and I'm not even doing a second, third, fourth, or fifth. One name on that list, most improved player, Kobe White.
That's a compelling argument. That's a compelling argument. And Steve will have a vote one day, and he will be voting and standing up for what's right. That's a great point about where, like, how much the improvement. So what is the award? Like, is it – did they make a leap? Like, what was their leap? How big was their leap? Everything else. Dunny breaking news from his load management. Drew Holiday just signed a 4-year extension.
Oh, Dunny's feeling good now. Dunny's starting to feel a little better now.
I'm a little shocked by that. A little shocked. Yeah. That's a huge Celtics would be paying a big
He's such a great fit for them.
Yeah, he's perfect for them. Perfect for them. Big total for them, but you got to keep this squad together. He is Drew Holiday, man. Good for him. One of the best guys in the NBA and was so underrated for so long. And now he's really getting his flowers. Obviously won the title with the Bucks, but on this Celtics team, $135 million, that's not bad. I would pay Drew Holiday any day of the week. So huge news, breaking news. We made it. We made the breaking news. Right after we logged off, Drew Holiday signs the extension.
It just ABC, took one Kobe White rant to get
I'm not there. Saying that we're going to support this, but we understand.
But JBC, I'm right there with you, JBC. I'm right there with you. There's a few awards I'm just going to get mad about this year because they're going to go one direction where I just feel like there's so much supporting the other guy in the conversation. The problem with Jalen Williams, Bloom, is he had a phenomenal rookie season, right? Yeah. I think he was second in rookie of the year after Banchero. So that's the problem with Jalen Williams. I think Jalen Williams is fantastic. I think he's a great player, but I think we already kind of saw that last year where he played really, really good. And if it wasn't for Banchero having such a great rookie season, he probably would have won rookie of the year. My thing is Kobe White went from a guy that was coming off the bench that people are like, oh, he's kind of a bust, like labeling a bust. Oh, he's, you know, he's probably not even going to be in the rotation. Like you can't trust this guy. He's inconsistent, to being a staple in the Bulls lineup, and not just the staple, but being sometimes their number one option some nights. And like I said, we're talking about DeMar DeRozan is could win most clutch player of the NBA. Kobe White is 1A, 1B with DeMar DeRozan on the Bulls right now. And he has been for pretty much the majority of the season. And when you do that, and also you double pretty much all your statistical averages, how can you say that's not most improved?
Yeah, it's a great point. A lot of fans wanted – they did. A lot of people wanted him. Kobe White didn't want him on this roster this year. So it's a good call. All right, so, Steve, I do have 3 All-NBA teams. We talked about
doing you got 3.
I got to it.
He got right to it before
I thought about it, wrote some – I did some switching around and writing as we've been doing it.
Okay.
But I think we're going to have the same first team.
Can I just say one more thing before the first team?
Yes,
just one more thing for JBC. Most improved player, Tyrese Maxey, went from 20 points a game last year to 25 game this year. Come on. Yeah,
great point.
20 points a game, you're going to be most improved. Get out of here.
One season and you improve on that, Bloomy. As we're talking about with Maxey, if he has 25 points a game next year, which J-Dub could very much end up with that, he could be on this in this award too.
I'm not going to give it to someone who I'm already like, they're already a very good player. Yeah. That's my problem. Right, I want improvement. It's like, wow, they shocked the world.
And I think a lot of this is what they ask of the player too. Like Maxey has been asked to do everything for the Sixers. Kept them afloat. Kobe too, though. Kobe's been asked to do a lot for this team. So I think that's why they get it. Jalen Williams is like really the third option on that offense. Like
I would argue second.
Depending on the matchups. But that's what I think the difference is between these three guys. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So the All NBA, I think we have the same first team.
Do we?
We will. Well,
okay.
Maybe. I'll go with mine. You tell me yours. See what's different here.
Let's hear it.
Jokic, Luka, SGA, Giannis, Jason Tatum.
Okay. All right. We do. All right. There was one name I was like,
who do you think we were gonna?
I was like, Dunny's not here. Is Jake gonna do something crazy? I was like, Dunny's not here. This is Jake's opportunity. But I think first team should be locked in. You shouldn't get punished.
Maybe I will do something crazy with another Celtic later on.
You shouldn't get punished for not playing right in the fourth quarter in most games because your team's so dominant. But yeah, Luka, Jokic, Giannis, SGA, and Tatum. That's got to be the consensus first team, right?
And I think when you look at all NBA teams, and I don't like the positionless, really don't like the positionless.
I don't either.
My team is not positionless. My team has positions, all three of them. So that take that for what it's worth here. At least comes close to having – at least it has bigs and smalls and everything. Don't like the positionless just for the history factor of it. But if you're looking at the first team and you want to see the snapshot of the season, who were the 5 most impactful players in the NBA this year, I think that Tatum has to be on that. And I think those 5 have to be the list. So I think we're in agreement there. Those are the 5 best players in the league. My second team, Jalen Brunson, Anthony Edwards.
We're two for two.
Kawhi Leonard. Kevin Durant. DeMontis Sabonis.
Second
team.
Okay.
What do you have?
I like it. I'm getting a little crazy here.
Okay.
I'm getting a little crazy here. Jalen Brunson, Anthony Edwards. Jalen Brunson, Anthony Edwards. I got them both. I'm going Kevin Durant.
Yep.
I'm going DeMontis Sabonis.
Oh.
And I'm going Jalen Brown.
I'm going
JB. I think you can argue Jalen Brown's been the best player on the Celtics in the second half of the season. Agree. I think you can argue that he's another guy who just gets hate on for no reason. I think Jalen Brown has been as good as anybody in the second half of the season. And same thing with Tatum. He just kind of gets punished a little bit because the Celtics have been so good. But you look at what Jalen Brown's done over the course of this season. I gotta give him some flowers, man. So I'm gonna bump him up to the second team. So Jalen Brunson, Anthony Edwards, Kevin Durant, DeMontis Sabonis, and Jalen Brown are my second team.
All right. I mean, I can't argue with that. Kawhi and Brown is a very good argument between the two. I had to have a Clipper in this second team, just how good Kawhi has been this year. I can't argue with that with Brown, where you have him there. That's what I was wondering, how high you'd have Jalen Brown.
You found out.
I did find out.
All right, you got a third team, you said?
I got a third team.
Let's hear it, Jake.
And I don't have Jalen Brown on it.
Wow. No. Donnie, turn it off. Turn off the pod, Donnie.
I have Tyrese Halliburton.
Okay.
Stephen Curry.
Okay.
Tyrese Maxey.
Okay.
Anthony Davis. And I've got Zion Williamson in the Brown spot. Now, Zion, first of all, the rule, the one guy who I guess Halliburton too, but has really benefited from the 65 game rule because he's at 67 games this year.
Right.
He's at 24 points a game, about 24 points a game, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, 57% from the field. If Brandon Ingram wasn't on this team, I think Zion would be like a 38-8 guy because it's really like they have done such a great job of being like, okay, tonight's an Ingram night, tonight's a Zion night. And if you look at their stats, they're almost exactly the same when it comes to like just the counting stats and everything, scoring and everything else. Zion defensively too has been a force.
Okay.
I think if I were picking the two players, imagine if Zion was on that Celtics team, are they any worse off? I don't think so. So that's where I'm going with it. I went with Zion. Jalen Brown over Tyrese Maxey. That's the argument that you could see making too.
Yeah.
But I think Maxey has just been so incredible this year that I want to give him the flowers for it.
I know. I feel like I'm going to be anti-Maxey because I don't think he's on my third team.
And that's fine. I think the third team you can make a lot of choices here if you really wanted to. I think Gobert is an option if you wanted to put him on your third team. I think you could do that. I think Wemby could be on this third team if you really wanted to put him there. I think Booker is an option that I didn't really consider Booker, but I think that he could be a guy there too.
I don't have either of those. I got Tyrese Halliburton, Steph Curry, Kawhi Leonard, Anthony Davis. And I'm putting father time on there, LeBron James.
Yeah, well,
I'm putting LeBron. I mean, how can you argue what LeBron's doing in year 20? He's averaging, 26, 7, and 8? I mean, the Lakers, like, when LeBron plays, like, some of the stuff he's doing, he's shooting the three ball as best as he's been, like, in his career. It's just what he's doing at his age. I feel like it would be just disrespect to not put him on one of the teams. And obviously, I don't think he's going to get first or second team. I got to throw LeBron on the third team. And like I said, Kawhi Leonard, I think he's having a phenomenal year. I just gave Jalen Brown just the edge just because of the Celtics team success and how good he's been in the second half of the year. Versus Kawhi. And then Anthony Davis, when he's on the court, man, when Anthony Davis is healthy, he's as good as any big man in the NBA. Got to throw him love on the third team. Steph Curry, Tyrese Halliburton. What have I said about these two guys all year? They're two of the best guards in the NBA. They have been. I know Tyrese had his kind of midseason slump for a little bit, and that kind of hurt him because if he didn't have that, I think you could make an argument for second team.
Yep.
The way he was playing. But I still got to throw him on the third team. Curry, Tyrese Halliburton, LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, Anthony Davis. And I'll tell you what, if we did a little pickup tournament, the five on five on five of the three teams, that third team's pretty good for a third team.
Just the guard specifically, SGA and Luka have been so far and ahead of everybody all year long. But if Brunson and Edwards and another year could easily be your first team guards, Haliburton and Steph in another year could be your first team guards. Like, all those guys have been incredible this year. I don't think you can go wrong with the All-NBA, the third team. It's going to cost some people some money this year, but there's a lot of options you can go. I do feel weird not having Jaylen Brown on this, but I think I have a different player from – I think I have a player from 15 different teams, and that's really what I was looking at, which is the talent in the league.
I got to give the Celtics some love, though, for 62 wins. I can't argue being that much better than everyone. I got to show them some love.
All right, so we're going to wrap up with some Bronny talk. Bronny James declares – for the NBA draft. Now he can still transfer and still go back to school the way this is all set up. So,
which I don't think is completely out of the question.
I don't think so either. And Duquesne feels like the spot that he would transfer.
It's crazy.
It's nuts. But hey, family ties, man. Drew Joyce taking over as head coach. I mean, Bronny, maybe he is a star in the A-10 next year. You know, I could very well see that. I think that, you know, he's been so – and even the GM today, there was like he wouldn't even be a third-round pick or something like that, or he'd be like if there was a third round. I think that's disrespectful to where we have to remember what Bronny went through at the beginning of this year. Maybe that's the argument for why he shouldn't be going into the draft. But I still think that this is a guy who can be a contributor – with his talent can be a contributor to a team. I don't think anybody's ever said Bronny's going to be a star. Like, no. That was never what we were thinking. Like, Bronny's not going to come in and be Anthony Edwards when he shows up.
I mean, it's weird with Bronny, right? Because it's hard to argue. He had a very disappointing year at USC.
Oh, yeah.
A very, very disappointing year. I mean, this was, you know, a guy who's, like I said, super, super hyped up, obviously because of the name. But you didn't expect him to go to USC. And then, obviously, you know, dealt with a little bit at the start of the year, and then having the coming off the bench at USC, not really finding his rhythm, not really getting into a role. USC was kind of a disappointing team as well. It's tough because you haven't really seen too much impressive on the court stuff from Bronny in college to say, okay, is he's NBA ready? But you also got to think, too, of the genes, right? You got to think of where it came from. You got to think of who his father is. And also, you got to think of the NBA teams. If he does declare, he does end up going, that they're thinking, we get Bronny, we might get a year or two of Bron. And I think that could boost anyone's draft stock up, regardless of what their potential is, regardless of athletic ability, regardless of everything. Just being the idea of, okay, we might get Bron for a couple of years. And, yeah, I know we're talking about an older Bron, but like I just talked about in my All-NBA third team, we're talking about LeBron that's averaging 25, 7, and 8. Like, we're still talking about a LeBron shooting very good shooting splits. Like, prime doesn't exist with LeBron for some reason. He's just dominant every year he plays basketball. So I think that comes into consideration too. I think Bronny should probably just transfer and go to a school where, like you said, Duquesne, a school where he can kind of show out, right? Where he can be the guy. I think that'd be good for him, especially confidence level too. Cause it's also going to be really hard on the kid after everything he's been through too, with the confidence level where there's so many people that are just discrediting him. So many people kind of rooting for him to fail just because he's LeBron's son, right? I think that's tough too, and there's a lot riding on him. I would, if I'm an NBA team and he declares, it's a very weak draft class. It's a very weak draft class. There's a lot of guys that, and I'm not going to say it's bad players. There's a lot of guys that could be solid role players or solid, you know, I'm trying to think of a good example. I don't want to say Mikal Bridges because he kind of became that guy in the Brooklyn Nets, but kind of how Mikal Bridges was on the Phoenix Suns, right? Going to play 35, 40 minutes. There's a lot of guys I feel like that could do that are going to impact the game, but they're never going to be those ones or twos that can take over in this draft class. So I guess, like, what's really the true risk in going for Bronny? Now, I wouldn't take him with a super high pick, but I don't think it's crazy to say he's not going to be like top half of the first round. With all those factors going in, you have the potential. You have the chance that Bron's just going to come and play with Bronny because he said he wants to play with his son. He's just going to go to your team at what kind of whatever it takes, or just it's LeBron. He can do whatever he wants at this point in the NBA. And also, too, like we're still talking about Bronny. He's still got a ton of potential. He's still super young, super raw. It's going to be a project, but I don't think you're going to draft Bronny if you're looking to compete right now. He's interesting because, like I said, it was as a college basketball fan and especially a Pac-12 fan watching all those late night games, because you know how much I love my late night basketball, Jake.
Oh, yeah.
It was very disappointing. It was very, very, very disappointing. But I don't think that means we can just kind of close the door on Bronny's NBA career and just say it's over for him.
I agree with you completely. I do think ultimately I agree with Bloomy that he's going to go back to school. I think this is just,
I think
if you can explore your options and he gets interviews to do with the combine and everything, go talk to people and say, if they say like, hey, we're going to draft you, no one's going to lie to him. No one's going to ruin that relationship with LeBron James. Like you said, potentially they're going to give him the truth. The best fit in the league is the Spurs, I think, because it's a team that could develop him. It's a team that LeBron, a coach that LeBron respects. They need a point guard of the future at some point. And if you're building a team around Wemby to try to compete next year, and you said, you mentioned if LeBron's coming with you, if you add LeBron James and Wembanyama together, first of all, it's one of the most historic pairings in NBA history to see those two together.
That would be something, dude.
I mean, that's what it like the best fit. If we're talking about an answer to strictly get LeBron to a team and a best fit basketball wise, I think the Spurs make a lot of sense for the development factor and that LeBron and Wembanyama next year as a pairing. There's a lot of people that are going to be picking them very high in the West, depending on who's around them on that team. So I do think he goes back ultimately.
I do too,
but I wouldn't be surprised if there's a couple teams that tell him like, yeah, we'll take you. We'll give you a shot. And that's when you would go into the league and go from there. But yeah, it was a disappointing year. It was hard to watch. You know, there's so much hype around him, but who knows how much of it goes into having a weird start to the season, like going into cardiac arrest, which is what he dealt with.
Yeah.
Coming back, he's fully healthy. He's fine to play, but getting back in the rhythm, you missed training camp, missed all that time with your teammates. Lame duck coach that gets fired, you know, and everything else. Like, clearly it wasn't working out there also. So it's weird. It's a weird season that he had there in USC. I think that if he had another place next year, I think he'd have a much better year with a more stable team. We talked about Duquesne, Drew Joyce, LeBron's former high school teammate, now coaching them. Feels like a good spot, but he put up a lot of pictures. He put the other day, put up Ohio State. I don't know if Kentucky is the same draw as it was before.
No, not anymore.
But maybe the Razorbacks, you know, maybe Arkansas is on that list with Coach Cal. Ohio State, as we mentioned.
I think Ohio State would be really cool.
It would have gone. Yeah, I think that, and I think that place makes a lot of sense. It was the first picture he posted there too. And if he wants to stay at a big school, it makes a lot of sense too.
So many people got like trolled by that too.
I've wondered if LeBron's going to wait for Bryce, because Bryce is Bryce is bigger. He's a little bit better shooter.
How many more years for Bryce though?
He's a junior this year. So he's got to do his senior year next year and then play a year. Well, no, I don't know. He might be able to come out right away, but I think Bron said he's going to go to school for a year.
Okay.
Goose says Duquesne color commentator, best commentator in the NCAA basketball. I don't know that, but I'll
top
I'll
five.
To, unless
top
it's you five,
Goose. There's some really good ones, Goose. There's some really good ones. Duquesne's up there.
But that'll do it for this episode of Happy Hour Hoops presented by WinStreaks. Go pick your games. Simple. You pick teams, accumulate points weekly starting on Monday, ending on Sunday. You pick five games per day, any sport. It's about to be a magical time with playoffs, baseball started up. You can win cash prizes weekly of up to $2,000. 100 players win every week. And use promo code HHH to sign up, and also if you refer your friends, you can win an additional 50% of what they win. So start winning your cash prizes today. For Steve, this is Jake. We'll be back next week with a full playoff preview. We'll talk with you all soon. Have a great night, folks.
See you guys.